February 16, 2006. Episode number 15. Interview with Jeff Stevenson, aka Bluebeard Man.
This is a Slugger podcast.
Oh boy, do I love bears. You can bet your life, but I do. Ain't nothing anywhere like a big black bear, long as he's a mile away from you.
It is 2:41 on February 16th, and I'm on my way to see Jeff Stevenson in his classroom. Jeff is a teacher. Once we get into his classroom, I'll set up the microphone, but I thought I'd do a little bit of gonzo journalism here. There's some dark clouds rolling in fairly fast. Ladue Road's coming up, and then... All right, is this the middle school? Da-da-da-da-da! No, that's some, okay, here we go, next one. Okay, I just went by Parkwood High School. And this looks like the middle school. Is this... Yes. Okay, I'm pulling into the middle school. Administrative offices. All of us are parking on upper level, straight ahead. This is it, okay. Alright. From Jeff's email. Room 207 is my classroom. Just park anywhere in the parking lot. When you enter the building, please check in at the main school office. There is absolutely no problem either entering or being in the building, but since 9/11, the district wants to know who is in the building. The ladies in the front office will be able to direct you to my classroom, or I might be up there anyway. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, before the rain comes, I need to get in the building before the rain comes. Coming up to the building. Central Middle School, Parkway School District. Here we go. Honey. Hi, I'm looking for Jeff Stevenson.
Jeff Stevenson, I believe his...
Like 201 or something like that.
I believe it's down there, but Carrie would be a better person to ask. Jeff Stevenson's classroom, he's down...
No, he's over there.
He's over there.
He's in wing
Thanks.
Eight. That big eight on the wall?
Eight? Okay.
Go down there to the left and take a right.
Okay. Jeff Stevenson?
Jeff Stevenson.
Yeah, supposed to be... I thought he said 201, but these are like 800 numbers.
Oh, shoot.
The wing...
The front office?
Yeah. Okay. They pointed me in this direction, but I guess wing 2 is the 2.
This is wing 2.
Have you
video man?
201 right here, but this is...
Audio. Are you
the
video man?
Jeff Stevenson?
Oh, okay.
He's looking for you. Late.
Oh!
Yeah. How are you talking about you?
Well, we've been keeping him busy.
I'm Joe.
Joe, how you doing? Is he?
A friend here.
Is he around the corner?
Yes, he has been waiting on you. See how nice I am for you, Brent. I'm in your switch room. My personality from Mississippi.
All right.
Welcome to the Parkway Central Middle.
Hey, thanks.
Joe Davis.
I do.
Hey. I'm bringing him to you. He's lost.
He's my guide. Thanks a lot.
How you doing, Paul?
Okay. Eric kind of buried back in here.
Yeah, oh, boy. They got to... you can't get too much further back.
Is this the room you teach in all the time?
Yep. This is it. This
class has got out of 2 and you're two getting ready for tomorrow?
Yeah. We're doing Constitution. And they start taking these Constitution quizzes. Score well enough the quizzes, they don't have to take the big 100-point test.
The guy that was out there, he's saying, are you the video guy? I'm like, I don't know, am I?
That's Joe, that's a custodian.
He's pretty cool.
In fact, I recorded myself coming in.
Sure.
I don't know how well that's going to be, but I'm going to put that as kind of like a bumper. I look at this more as a documentary. And my podcasts aren't entertainment. It's more like information.
So have you listened to any of the podcasts? Do you know what
I listened to expect? A couple of the earlier ones, but then
my worst ones?
Well, I listened to the one with Dorcas, and it's been a while since I've listened to any of them.
But the quality has improved quite a bit since then, so
okay. If
you listen to one of the more recent ones, they'll be easier to understand, and the volume's a little bit more controlled.
Right.
So
I always thought it was a fun concept, and fun thing to do.
Yeah.
One of the things I enjoy doing is like listening to community radio. When I was in Kansas City, there was this community-run radio station that anybody who would volunteer got to have like a half-hour time slot. Mm-hmm. It was just fun to you'd hear 10 different music styles in one evening. One of the internet radio stations I listen to here is FolkGolly.com, and it's all folk music. It's a surprisingly wide range of music styles. And this is kind of in that same sort of vein. Of course, it's not folk music, but at the same time, it's certainly not the prepackaged glitter hype top 40 here in every market.
I haven't listened to what they call terrestrial radio, the radio in your car with a over the air, maybe for about a year. Once in a while, I'll turn it on. But I load this thing up with podcasts. That's all I listen to on my commute.
Okay.
And my commute, not only am I learning things and seeing what people are doing other places in the world, but I forget about that I'm driving in this rush hour traffic, so I'm not stressed as much as I thought.
Right.
This is great.
Yeah.
Everybody out in podcast land, this is Paul Konopacki. I'm sitting with Jeff Stevenson in his schoolroom office. Jeff's geocaching name is Blue Bead Man. There is a story behind it, I'm sure. We'll find out in a little bit. Jeff, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do for a living and how you eventually got started into geocaching.
So I grew up here in San Luis, was in North County. Went to a small private school called North County Christian up in Ferguson. Graduated in a class of 13 students. That's how small it was. There, went to William Jewell College, just north of Kansas City. When I graduated in 1988, I was in love and had a girlfriend that became my wife. We were actually living together. Eventually got married and eventually got divorced. So she got Kansas City, I got San Luis.
And you're staying off of the side of the state.
Yeah. So this is my eighth year as a classroom teacher. Started the internship here at Central Middle. And I fell in love with the middle school and said, this is what I really want to be doing is middle school. Why limit myself to math? I love history. It was always good in history. Dad has our family tree traced back to before the American Revolution. And so one thing led to another. Can't think of a better job than teaching U.S. history. In terms of the career, I'm right where I want to be for who I am. I love working with the kids. It's amazing to watch their eyes light up when you start talking about this concept or that concept. I just recently turned 40 and I feel like I'm going on 15.
I've always believed that teachers were underpaid. Because I think they definitely... Oh, you're welcome for being entertained.
Well, thank you for noticing. My computer days were 15 years behind me, more than 15 years behind me. And I'm just now catching up to what I was making 15 years ago. One of the duties that I do as a school teacher is attend sixth grade camp or the outdoor school that we go on every year down to Camp Lakewood and Potosi. We do special events and special things. One of the stories I tell at sixth grade camp on closing campfire, kind of as to tie up the entire experience of camp, is the Blue Bead story. It's a story about a young boy who believes that there's other people and an old man who believes that there's other people out there. They're kind of the optimist in the group. And then most of the other part of the group is more of a pessimistic. No, there's nobody else living in the world. And they live in this prehistoric time when very few people live, and they're part of this small little tribe. And the old man decides that he's going to try to find other people. And it's just kind of this struggle between the optimist and the pessimist. As the story progresses, it's really a story of connection, not just between the old man and the young boy, but the old man and people he's never seen before and brings this other tribe of people back. Part of this new tribe that he brings back is a young boy with a blue bead. And the new young boy presents the blue bead to the older boy. Mm-hmm. And so there's a connection being made between different tribes. Now the blue bead lies in a sandy place, and then, you know, who's going to find it? Here's mm-hmm. a map to follow.
How did you decide to pick that story and actually make it a part of your persona?
It was kind of just an off-the-cuff type of thing. They said, you know, here, can you read this book? I picked the book up, and the first year I just read the book. I was like, you know, this is a really cool story. It really needs to be done not just by somebody reading the pages. You know, it's a 30, 40-page book.
It needs to be performed.
And it needs to be performed. It has to, you know, it's got to be some sort of dramatic. So over the course of the next year, as we were getting prepared for the next year's camp, I said, well, I think I'll surprise people and see if I can't memorize this and do a dramatic performance mm-hmm. of it. That's exactly how the story became a part of me, mm-hmm. is learning that story and going over it time after time after time. It is a form of a poem, a rhyming poem, but it has a lot of dramatic elements to it.
Fun at the same time?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. So.
Students, in a minute, the after-school activity bell is going to ring. We're going to ask that you come into the atrium area since it is raining outside, and we'll find bus numbers as they pull up, and we'll dismiss you from inside to go to the bus. I don't want to get my hair wet. It's raining, and I don't want to stand out in the rain, so... We'll see you in the atrium in a couple minutes.
Funny thing is he has no hair.
Oh, that's what's even funnier.
Right.
I saw the rain coming out. Big black cloud. See, it's finally coming down pretty hard.
Right. Mm-hmm. I went out to my truck to make a phone call before you arrived, mm-hmm. and I saw that big cloud.
Big wall,
yeah. I was like, oh boy, we're in for it.
Yeah.
A student taught in Parkway Central Middle School building, actually right across the hall. At the end of student teaching, Parkway hired me. My first school was actually Parkway West Middle, and I taught 7th grade unified studies, combining social studies and language arts. That led into being transferred back to Central Middle, and I've been here ever since. The main curriculum that I teach is like a U.S. history. From colonial times up to Civil War and Reconstruction. Okay. If you look around in my class, you see 6 different fairly up-to-date computers, simply because we do a lot of internet, we do a lot of discussion forum, a lot of online types of, call them WebQuest, where here's a website, here's, you know, 5-6 questions. Mm. Go answer these 5-6 questions by looking at this website. Go back to like an elementary school. You heard the George Washington chop down the cherry tree type mm-hmm. stories. Well, historians have gone back and tried to find where that happened, and they realize, okay, that was building the nation, and it was kind of, I don't want to say myth building, because that's
almost
not
a metaphor either. Or an interpretation of an event that somehow, you know, over time a story gets told and eventually
exactly.
it becomes a different story
exactly.
and the details are lost.
Right. Another one is the Abner Doubleday, you know, creating baseball. Well, historians have gone back and realized baseball is much older than Abner Doubleday. What they've done is they've gone back and looked at history in probably a more fair, mm-hmm. Objective way. You know, at MOGA, I asked the question, who was the first president? U.S. history classes, mm-hmm. George Washington's the first president. Well,
yeah. John Hancock?
He was president of Congress mm-hmm. that signed the Declaration of Independence. And we forget that Second Continental Congress that creates the Declaration of Independence also create the Articles of Confederation. Mm-hmm. It was the first government for the country. Mm-hmm. And there was any number, 12, 13 people that served as president of Congress.
There's a lot of history that gets watered down into being more like American trivia.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, I don't know history, but John Hancock, isn't that when you write your name?
Right.
I'm assuming it has something to do with John Hancock. When he signs papers, he takes up the whole paper.
Yeah.
And everybody else signs little.
I had pictures of the Articles of Confederation, and we put the signers, the picture of all the different signers. All these people wrote in real small letters. John Hancock wrote in big, huge letters. It got, you know, the Declaration of Independence. Everybody said, oh, he signed it so big so the king doesn't have to take his glasses off. Well, again, that very famous quote, I signed it so big the king doesn't have to take his glasses. Not necessarily true, because he signed the Articles of Confederation that way and all these other things. He was just real flamboyant with his signature.
Right.
And so, you know, it's... Yeah, you're right. It's some of those get kind of...
Attention students, bus 222 has arrived. If you ride bus 222, please proceed outside to your bus.
Is that the secret to history is the last five letters of the word. It's
a story.
Yeah. It's our story. It's not just, you know, the Thomas Jeffersons and Benjamin Franklins, but it's us right now. You know, everybody's
in history right now.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what the kids get out of it is, you know, what just happened seconds ago. That's history. The way that I found geocaching, again, it was a teaching sort of thing. I had a teacher meeting at one of the parks around town. And so I didn't know how to get to the park. So I typed in the internet and asked for directions. Actually, there was a letterbox in that park. The letterbox appeared first and foremost, even above how to get directions to go to this park. You know, I checked the letterboxing site out, and that led me to geocaching. I already had a GPS. I had it to do sixth grade camp. This is a sport just for me. I should be doing this. And so I started looking at the different caches. At the time, I thought this would be a great sport for my dad. You know, my dad loves doing mapping types of stuff, going around and exploring. So I got in a car with my dad. I said, let's go do this. You know, I said, let's get in the car and try this. We drive to, it was actually General Bissell's house in North County. I've got the GPS, but I'm wandering the grounds looking for this little cache. I didn't even understand that I'm supposed to go to where the coordinates actually, you know, match up the coordinates to what's on the page. To I'm just kind of peeking in bushes and, you know, just wondering. And Dad said, what are we supposed to be looking for? You know, and eventually I said, well, let me try to match the coordinates on the GPS with the coordinates on the page. Eventually I get to close to this tree. I reach up, and in the trees, this little acorn-sized cache. Nancy had placed this little bitty cache, and I open it up, and little bitty scroll. it's a micro. I think I've seen one cache that may be smaller than that particular cache, and that was the first cache. I was hooked, and I was like, wow, that's cool. That particular day, I went and we tried to find four or five different caches around town.
So far you're finding a lot of little caches. Do you think geocaching was just all little caches at that time? Or?
Well, not really, because I had been reading on the internet of what the caches were supposed to be. I think that even at that time, probably micro caches were just starting to kind of appear in wide numbers. And it got me really hooked. I was, man, I really need to. I saw the posting for Slaga. I did a cache, I think it was that first day, Slaga. And in my log, I'm saying, Slaga, is this an organization that does this? And so, I checked the internet, and sure enough, there's the organization. That led me to what's called MIGC there at Hahn, becomes MOGA. And I saw that, and it was like, wow, the whole competition that for GeoCat, I got to get into this. I signed up, I was a little bit late, and I got a camping spot, and I camped in my truck. Of all places. I didn't even pitch a tent. I just kind of slept in the front seat of the truck to do it. I was never so beat as I was that weekend, just running around up and down these hills and how we turned the individual course into a team course. And we did so probably at the second waypoint. There's like 20 waypoints we had to find. And we get to the second waypoint and the three of us are looking for one little tag. And when we find it, the three of us just kind of continue on as a team until Sunday morning to finish the course out. We caught up with the fourth person, and so the four of us just kind of did. And there was only four finishers in that first competition. And we all finished basically at the same time because we did the course all pretty much at the same speed. And
it's been like 2 years anniversary since you signed up for geocaching.com.
Right, the 13th of February was when I signed up. And so Valentine's Day of 2004 was when I found the first one. We're the 16th of February now. So yeah, it's been 2 years. By March of 2005, 13 months after I'd started, I had found about 1,000. And a lot of that, that first year, we did a lot of trips as a group We had a trip to Jeff City. We had a trip to Columbia. We had a separate trip to Montauk and one to Hannibal Quincy, two to Springfield, Illinois. To be absolutely honest with you, when I first found it, it's like, man, I got to go hide some caches. I don't want to say laziness set in, but it turned out to be a good thing.
Right.
Because, yeah, I wanted to hide, but my first thought was, let me hide it right out here in my front yard. our mom and dad have this neat little play castle for, you know, their grandson. Mm-hmm. Let's hide it in there. And of course, thinking back now as an experienced cacher, no, I wouldn't place a cache mm-hmm. anywhere near private property, especially like a front yard in a residential mm-hmm. area. Your mind, you know, wow, I really want to hide a cache.
Right.
Students, Laidlaw North is here. If you ride Laidlaw North, please proceed outside to your bus. That's Laidlaw North.
I apologize for all these.
Oh, don't worry about it.
We got about three times as many just simply because of all the rain.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you remember the first one you put out?
Really, the idea was the Stanislaus caches, the set of three of them. And I tried to hide them, and I started going through the process, but that's all on Department of Conservation land. And so I went to Tom Liefeld, who was in Columbia Bottoms, and he was willing to approve it. He just wanted me to go through all the paperwork to, you know, here's the map, here's the write-up, here's that. And that was fine to get the permit, but the permit process took some time. One of the favorite hides that I've made is the Gone Fishing cache. That gets a lot of good comments on it. It's a combination.
Still active?
Mm-hmm. It is still active. And it's kind of a combination of the urban, micro, tough-to-find type mm-hmm. of thing. Yet at the same time, there's a traditional element to
it. And that's
it as
all
well.
You can say without giving away the secret.
Exactly, exactly.
So you got to go hunt it to find out what it's all about.
Exactly.
Have you slowed down since your early days?
In many ways, yeah. Last summer, I took several months off. You can get to a point where you're so addicted to it, you almost have to slow down. And so I did slow down quite a bit. Now, there's still days. Like the President's Day is coming up, the 20th, and I'm thinking, okay, I want to hit 10, 15 all in one day just because I've got that opportunity.
Would you plan a whole day just to find one cache?
I have a dream at some point of hitting GC8, which is like the oldest cache that still exists.
Mm-hmm.
It's on Mount St. Helens. I'd love to spend just an entire day hitting that one particular cache. And even if that was the only cache you found in a day, when I went out with Bernie for Island Adventure, we did it early in the fall. We parked at the Stanislaus while I was parking the one parking lot. So we headed straight on back down, straight toward the river. We got to that little back marsh type area.
Mm-hmm.
Found it was lots of water. Okay, mm-hmm. we're not going to be able to cross it. And there was Lucky Rebel, and one of her workers or co-workers was with us, and it was Bernie and myself. We get to that point, there's no way we're going to cross here. So we walked along the bank. Lisa, Lucky Rebel, knew the people that owned some of the land next mm-hmm. to Stanislaus. And so as we were walking along, we see this rock dam jetted out into mm-hmm. actually crossed that backwash, and it was not covered with water. It mm-hmm. was open. So we got down, we actually climbed across this and was able to cross this without getting wet to the main island. We think we're still in Stanislaus area. And we get to this field, and we see this trailer at the edge of the field. Keep walking, hiking, and we're still a half mile away from the cache, and we're walking. It was like a farm field that had been cut. Saw a pickup truck in the distance, mm-hmm. and we kept walking. Finally, we get to the edge of the island and realize we still have like another tenth or 0.15 to go. And there was another little island across this little sandbar.
Right.
So we cross the sandbar, get over onto this island. We're looking for this. No way this cache is. It hadn't been found in a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're looking, and sure enough, we stumble upon the cache. It's right out in the middle, basically, of the Missouri River.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not the easiest place to get to it. The story, though, really begins at that point because as we're coming back, we start crossing that field again where we saw the pickup truck, and by this time Bernie's getting a little parched, and you know we've walked already several miles, and he sees the trailer. By this time there's now three or four guys kind of sitting around outside this trailer. So Bernie starts walking up to the trailer and just, hello, hey, we're here. Yeah, can I have some water? Can I get a drink? And they start asking him, why are you out here? Why, that time that we kind of chimed in with, Lisa had the owner's name and was able to kind of just say, well, so-and-so, let us be out here. We're out here. And once that happened, we got out as quickly as we could. We got back across the dam. Somehow we lost the path. Ended up on Aubuchon Road, probably about a mile away from vehicles. Were. Mm-hmm. So we're walking along Aubuchon Road with cars just flying at us, almost at highway speed. Right. And here we are 2 feet from the edge of the road.
Yeah, there's no shoulder there.
There's no shoulder at all. I had to walk back that entire distance. The darkness has fallen by that time. Mm-hmm. The caches I enjoy doing are caches that you can go and you can find it. Even and it takes you someplace nice. I'd hate to go to the back of a corporate building and the cache is next to a dumpster. It's a suspicious enough activity to begin with, and then you're hanging around the backs of buildings.
Even though there's a cache type or placement that you don't like, would that prevent you from looking for it? You may not like it, but I'm going to go find it because I haven't found it yet.
Yeah, you're right about that. It doesn't matter. It doesn't. I'll look for a micro. It doesn't matter what type cache. There's caches that, I may not like this or that type cache, but I'll still go out. A cache is a cache. They're all fun to do, and quite frankly, you never know what you're going to get into. That's part of the fun of caching, is you're not going to know exactly what you're going to get into until you actually find the cache. And I think it's all about finding caches rather than stumping people.
Have you ever had the penchant for wanting to be first to find?
Not usually. I'm not. If it happens, great. And I've been first to find on a few caches around town. I'm not sitting at the computer. Where's the name? Oh, a new one's popped up. Let me go.
Because chances are there's somebody who wants that first to find worse than you.
And it's a neat part of caching, really, to know that if I'm going to hide something, as soon as I type that up, within the first 24 hours, it will probably be hit 3 or 4 times. And that's a neat feeling to know that there are people that are going to race to find something that you've hidden. And I do some geocaching activities with my students in classes. Not inside the building, we go outside and I've done a kind of a micro type course where I put little punches in pillboxes, hit them around the school grounds. We had the field trip last spring down to the zoo. Great, we can go geocaching. And there were several other students that all chimed, yeah, we're going to go geocache. They watched them, and they were always excited. We got 3 new people that have found it. And I think there has been a couple that have caught on to it and have done some caching. Nobody's been gung-ho.
Right.
Glenn has that meet your local officials type cache. And I logged that with the Tom Liefeld, working with the Missouri Department of Conservation. That was a new experience for him. And I think that if you approach the Missouri Department of Conservation with an attitude of, yeah, you have a policy. This is kind of what I need to do. Yes, I'm willing to do all this. Here's all the work. All you have to do is look at it, rubber stamp it. Then usually the officers and the rangers will, okay, I don't have to really do anything here other than look at it and say okay, then okay. If you're putting any burden on the Department of Conservation, that's when I think that you start having problems.
Well, Jeff, thanks for taking the time out. Looks like we're going to be kicked out of our interview by the janitor who wants to vacuum your messy floor here.
Yeah, and it's messy. Thanks for listening, and it's been an honor to sit down and talk with you.
I think your podcast number 15, and it'll be on the internet in a few days. I appreciate it, Jeff.
Thank you.
I haven't been plugged into MOGA House.
It's going well. Mike took it over, and I was kind of thankful that he did that.
What's your role in it? I mean, I remember last year you were going to head it up, and then I think that's when things kind of hit the wall, so to speak.
I did, and I was gone for a good 4 or 5 months.
But we're all kind of glad to see that you're back in it.
Yeah. the girl that's sitting out here, or actually both of the older kids that are sitting out there, high school seniors, I had them back graders. And these are honors kids.
What are they doing?
They're tutoring the kid that came in and used the tissues. Uh-huh. He's another one of the autistic kids that we have.
Okay.
And so they're out here helping him. They're basically tutoring him. We put the tripod about somewhere in here, and we have the kids act in this mm-hmm. area. And then I have the big. In fact, you can probably see some of the staple marks where we've stapled the blue curtains up here. I have two larger mic stands here, and okay. we have the mixing board and the microphones running into the mixing uh-huh. board, and then tripod with firewire into EMAC,
right.
And then the EMAC records it.
Okay, class. Today we're going to talk about the First Amendment of the Constitution, which is called the Bill of Rights. Now, Stephen, what were you talking about with Jordan?
I was just telling Jordan about my weekend.
And is that more important than the Bill of Rights?
Well, yeah, it's geocaching.
Geocaching! I'll wait.
Did you write that?
Okay, now it's better.
They wrote it.
So, Stephen, tell us about your
weekend. This is the class that hid the...
We're geocaching.
See my badge and my GPS?
Quiet, fool. My geocaching senses are tingling. Hey, look, I found a geocache.
That's a microphone.
What are you guys doing, and what is geocaching?
Well, it's this game. Other people hide stuff, and then other people come and find it.
Sounds suspicious to me. I'm calling the cops.
What?
But hands up against the wall.
What's this? Hey,
as a citizen, I can go anywhere I want in a public place without harming anybody, and that's within the constitutional rights. You are violating my rights.
You're right. It's unconstitutional. Enjoy your geocaching and unalienable rights.
Sweet.
I'd love to put that up on the Slaga site.
Let's see if I can't get it
now
to you.
Now you like the Bill of Rights better?
No, not really. I just want a geocache. Geocaching!
Am I going to have to head out less attentions?
Plays when they have the plays. This becomes the stage. You see the lights and stuff on top.
Oh.
So this becomes their stage.
That's neat.
And they put all the chairs out here.
Yeah.
Of course, it's the atrium or the cafeteria. And it's kind of like the hub. Originally, this particular building was not a single building. It was a building, 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 and gyms. And it was the original Central High School. And then they enclosed everything. Like this was a big open, wide open courtyard area. Tied all the buildings together. Added the wing that we were in. Parkway had stabilized, or at least this part of the area has stabilized.
There's no more room for new houses.
yeah, exactly. Here we are, right here. And you can see we're... I guess you've got area here. This is where Tiger Woods was supposed to come and play that Belle Reve back in 2001. And then September 11th happened.
Oh.
Hello? This is one of my fellow geocachers. This is Loretta Holloway.
Hi, how you do?
We've met before.
No, I don't think so.
Have we? Familiar.
I've got that face.
He was interviewing me about the geocaching type stuff.
Oh.
So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we did it here because it was...
His voice is going to be on the internet in a few days.
Yeah.
Telling about his experiences as a teacher and his geocaching.
Okay.
Hopefully he didn't say anything bad about you. Did you?
No, I don't think so.
I'll cut it out.
You cut it out. All right.
Nice meeting you.
Sure.
Okay, Jeff, keep me posted on this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm glad the weather's calmed down a little bit.
Yeah. This is an area, when I've done the class stuff, like the flagpole, I'll always hide one underneath the flagpole. I put one in this tree before.
So you say, whenever you go to Nashville, this is what you'll find.
Yeah.
Go to any lamppost, pull up, you'll find a geocache.
You heard about the Strider and Curtis Beach this past summer. They went down there and... They were in Nashville, and they were going to do the best of Nashville. So they're down there in Nashville going to try to do the best. They were joking around, saying, just look, we can probably walk up to this sign, and there'll probably be a geocache sign, and sure enough, there was a geocache there.
This concludes the Slaga podcast. For more information about the Slaga group and geocaching in the St. Louis, Missouri area, go to www.geostl.com. Here's wishing you a strong signal and a trusty bearing.